League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
The Initial Reaction Podcast coming at you from a very special location this week at Miller Park in Milwaukee. I am joined today by a special guest, Adam McAlvey of Brewers.com, MLB.com, however you want to look at it. Adam has been covering the team, the Brewers Baseball Club, for 15 seasons. Is that right?
Yeah, 16 is underway.
Unbelievable. So that's crazy, right? You've been covering for 16 years. That makes you sound super old, but you're not super
old.
Well,
you've always made me feel super old.
I have. It
with
is
your
a
commentary.
Massive
you
generational were... gap between the two of us.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a great place to start with our inside joke for your listeners.
Yeah.
But you were my intern, and I know we don't call our interns interns, but with you I've always thought of you as an intern. In 2003.
Yeah, dude, I'm as old as you are, really. I mean, when it comes down to it.
That's true. So let's
that's not right. 2004, because 2003 I worked for the Brewers, and 2004 I worked with you. So
okay, so 2004. So it's important to tell the story that we were talking about. You and your friends had a blog that you all contributed to.
That's right. Back in the days when blogs were a thing, yeah.
And
that was me.
I said to you one day, I said, boy, that's really fun. I wish my friends and I did that. And you looked at me with a perfectly straight face and said, that's a generation.
I don't think you were on, like, you did email or something at that point in your life. Was that right?
I was literally 25 years old at that point.
And I was somewhere in that neighborhood, too, and no longer. But that's okay, because it gives us lots of stories, presumably, because you've been doing this for a long time. You've seen some good teams. You've seen some bad teams. This year's team is going to look kind of bad, as we saw perhaps on opening day. And we'll get to that. This is, as we're talking here, it's the second day of the season. And it is always striking the bizarre shift from day one to day two. Day one is all about ceremony. I don't think that's a surprise to people. But then, like, as a baseball fan, I like day two because you come to the stadium, it's not super packed, it's not weird, crazy people in the parking lot. It's just a baseball game again. I like that.
I love it from a writing perspective, too, because no offense to my friends at the Door County Times-Picayune.
Is that a thing? That's
but
not a thing.
It's nice to get into your routine. It's always a night game, you know, which is the routine that we're used to working in this industry. It is totally down to business.
Yeah.
You know, opening day is almost an extension of spring training where it's go, go, go. It's so much more work in spring training than the regular season. It's all these day games, and opening day is part of that to me. This is the day to me where it feels like the regular season starts.
I feel like when I talk to you about baseball, it's always very limited conversation because I get the sense with you and with a lot of actual beat reporters that talking about baseball outside of work is a little bit, not taboo, but it's hard to do because you kind of want to unwind it. Do you feel that way, that it's hard to actually break down the Brewers when you're with your friends or when you're just hanging out after
the
game?
Well, I think one thing that I battle, and I think it's like this with any job that you do, when you're watching it every day and you're hearing their justifications for certain things, you get almost a warped view of it. And sometimes it's good, though, to step back and have a conversation in the outside to kind of see the view of the people who are you know, literally watching it and not hearing what the players and the executives have to say. So I don't mind talking about it. And the other thing is, like, when I sit home this afternoon before coming to the game, I was watching the Yankees game.
Yeah.
I mean, the day I stop wanting to talk about or watch or think about baseball outside of the 9 hours or so that I'm technically on the clock is the day I probably need to do something else.
Right, yeah. So I'm guessing you've been a baseball fan pretty much your whole life. 15 years ago, MLB.com was not the juggernaut it is today. Mm-hmm. What was that like? I mean, you were starting out very young, following a team that nobody really thought would be good, so maybe it was a little bit less visibility than you ultimately ended up getting, but at the same time, you're this new media outlet. I'm sure people didn't know how to take that, how to take the website reporting. So what were those early days like for you?
I always say our slogan at the beginning should have been, just get it done.
Yeah.
Because it was, it happened really fast. So for me, there were a lot of things personally going on. I was just out of school. I went to UW-Madison, graduated 2000, came back, couldn't find a job in baseball. And I was working for the Milwaukee Bucks as in a full-time capacity, but an intern capacity, and looking for a job. And in while I was there, it was December 2000, the Major League owners voted to form MLB.com as a separate entity before all the teams had done their own websites. They voted to I think the NBA and NFL already had this model where they combined into a central entity where it was – those at least had news stories, and then, oh, by the way, while you're reading this news, we've got tickets for sale and merchandise and all the rest. So when I started, I was hired as an assistant web editor, and I had absolutely zero qualifications for the job. They were hiring 60 people in the span of a couple of weeks right before the start of spring training, and I honestly believe it's because I could form coherent sentences and was available that I got this job.
So did you have web, you had web responsibilities too, like producing for the web though? That was primarily it?
In the very beginning, yes.
Oh, wow.
In the very beginning, I had an office at Miller Park on the Loge level near a lot of the ticketing people. And I was involved in meetings about ticketing and what they wanted reflected on the website. Which I had no idea how to execute, what they wanted.
Let me pass you on to someone who knows what they're doing.
And then, you know, I would work 9 to 5, and then I would come down to the dugout and fake like I knew what the procedure was for interviewing players and the manager, and write a story, and then post the story myself on the website, and go home by 1 or 2, and then come back at 9 in the next morning.
Wow.
So it was really different. It happened soon after that MLB.com hired an editor-in-chief, Din Mann, who's still there today. And it became then, I think, pretty quickly that we were going to be a news organization.
Okay.
So I think my job by 2002, it was pretty strictly, I was a reporter. And then I started to kind of slowly distance myself from, you know, people thinking I worked
for
the
club.
Team. Exactly.
Right. So, but then that sort of brings up, I don't know what you want to call it, the tension that probably still exists today as a reporting outlet that also is part of Major League Baseball. That's kind of a weird fine line. Is that something you guys still have to struggle with, or do you have this freedom, this editorial autonomy that allows you to do whatever you want as a reporter?
So the simple answer is that I do have editorial autonomy. That tagline at the end of my story is not subject to the approval of Major League
right,
Baseball.
Yeah.
It's legitimately true. That said, I mean, I'm not naive enough to think that there's not a gray area. My job is different than, say, Tom Hodgecourt at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. I have a different, it's just a little different. It doesn't stop me from writing things when I have to write them, when bad things happen. When Ryan Braun happened, I felt like we covered that fairly and accurately and completely. But it is, in that and other cases, just a little different. And it has definitely changed because at the onset, this was, of course, the big concern of the, you know, the, it sounds stupid to say old media, but of the existing media.
Yeah.
Was here comes this new entity, and they thought that teams are going to give all the stories and all the information to these new websites. And it took a long time for that barrier to be broken down to where the newspaper guys saw that our jobs were just the same as theirs. And it happened because they saw it with their eyes. I think it also happened because as time went on, we hired more and more and more journalists who came from newspaper jobs, long-time newspaper jobs. So we have, you know, we were not in the Baseball Writers Association of America for all the years I'd done this job until December, which we
this past
talk,
December.
This past December.
Oh wow, okay.
So you are here with a BBWA.
You are a voting member of the BBW. I'm losing the acronym in my head, but that's you now. That's great.
As of December, so now we have
you get to vote for the awards and stuff.
Exactly. So
that's
I had never
awesome.
Before had MVP, Cy Young, all those votes. It was a separate entity.
Yeah.
So that it's a huge change, and I think it reflects the fact that. They've seen that we're covering the teams just as they are. There's no special treatment.
Right. So it's a little bit of an irony that in the age where you guys finally get to do that, you're also not being asked to be just game story, you know, notebook reporters. It's all about, it's about shorter stories. It's about video, which yep. isn't necessarily on your end, but like that's, it's about social media interaction. How has that transition been for you? Is it a difficult thing? I imagine for some of the people in your organization who are experienced writers, like you said, this transition is hitting home is kind of a difficult thing for them to grab onto.
Well, I think that my benefit is that this is all I know.
Sure.
From the first day of this job, it has been adapt, adapt, adapt. So when things started to change in this direction, I just did it. My bottom line with all of this stuff is I want eyeballs to be on the things that I spend time doing. So if that means writing shorter stories, which has happened with MLB.com and many other publications, I'm going to write shorter stories. I mean, our edict now is like 500 words, which is nothing. You cannot craft a really good story in 500 words. But it's a different kind of challenge because now I am writing things that are shorter. And you have to decide what's important, what's newsworthy, and what can I grab people with.
Right.
And, you know, I am shooting video. I am doing TV. I am sitting here with you doing a podcast.
Yeah, no doubt.
I'm doing my own podcast on iTunes. Which
really?
I'm going to
subscribe when does
to
that start?
That's been out for like a year
and
a half.
Are you kidding? I've heard you on podcasts, but I thought that was the MLB.com one.
Well,
you have your own. Okay.
Same.
So thank goodness. I'd feel very bad if I had missed several episodes of the show.
Add it to the list of things for you to feel bad.
That's fine. I do
feel
terrible.
No, but I mean, this is. To resist the change that's happening in media is to beat your head against a wall.
Right.
It's not going to stop because, you know, old Joe newspaper man doesn't want it to change.
Right.
It's going to just keep changing without him. So my thing was I like having a job. I really like that every 2 weeks they pay me for coming to baseball games.
Right, no doubt.
And I would really like to continue getting paid for coming to baseball games. So let's just roll with it. And you find things that you like. For example, the stuff I've done with MLB Network is really challenging. I've always thought of TV guys, I mean, sorry for the TV guys if anyone's listening to this, as kind of idiots.
Yeah.
And it's kind of the joke when you're the scribe.
Because it's just the surface. It's the first two paragraphs of every story. That's kind of how I look at it.
It's the sound bite.
Right.
Yeah, and they come in to their manager, they kind of get in the way, and they ask these lame questions.
Yeah, totally.
And they don't care what the answer is. They just want it on camera. But now doing television myself, it's hard.
Right.
Because you've got 10 seconds to say what you want to say, and there's no delete button, there's no do-overs, and if you screw it up, you look like a total idiot.
Yes.
And it's just a different kind of challenge, and that's kind of how I've looked at all the changes that have gone on. It's just a different challenge, and if you want to, again, keep getting paid for sitting here watching Johnny Cueto throw baseballs... do it.
This
is what you got to do.
So back in 02, when you were the first, you said that was like your first full reporter year. Brewers were terrible. The worst team in Brewers history.
Yeah.
Miller Park was still new. They had the All-Star game. They had people arguing with the manager on the mound. It was a disaster. Those teams for those first few years, so bad. And in a way, I'm so afraid that this year's Brewers team is going to totally harken back to that. Now, they seem to have a plan this year that maybe they didn't those first years. But that's, I think what the big letdown is, they... Brewers fans such as myself have tasted the fandom, and now it's back to that previous place. Do you feel that this with this year's team, you've been around them now for spring training, do you feel like this is similar to those early years, or is it a completely different vibe? I remember them calling it the land of opportunity in 03 and 04 for guys that needed to rehab their careers. Is that kind of where we are right now, or is it better than that?
Well, here's the fundamental difference is 2002 was bad and dysfunctional. 2016 is bad with a plan.
Okay.
And I think a lot of the dysfunction you hope if you're, you know, Craig Counsell is mitigated by the fact that they have an idea of what they're trying to do.
Definitely.
And I think that is what, you know, I think I give them some credit for being upfront with the fans. You know, in Cincinnati, you kind of read about what's going on, and I'm not sure that it's quite as transparent about what they're doing in Cincinnati.
Right, right.
As it's been here. And Mark Attanasio told us last August when Doug Melvin was going to step out of the job, he said, when we come to a point where we have a plan, I'm going to do my best to articulate it. And I actually think he's done that.
Yeah.
I think he's followed through on that. So I think that's the big difference here. They're going to have to get people to try to – they're going to get people to buy into the idea that we're bad, but there's an end in sight. And it helps that 90 miles down the road is a team that came through it last year. I think that – you know, while it doesn't help them because they have to play that team,
right.
Not that they're good, it helps them provide a vision to fans that's not all that far away.
Yeah. Do the athletes read what you write, do you think?
Oh,
do the majority of them, or is it maybe half and half?
Well, in, you know, subtle question here.
Okay.
Would any of them say they read it?
Well, probably not.
Very few.
But you think, some, I mean, I presumably most of them do.
I think what you get is, my brother told me. A lot of them do have, like, a the brother or an aunt or a right. father who's really into it, and they follow everything.
Sure.
So the simple answer is that, yes, these guys know everything that is written, said.
And have you ever had a confrontation because of something you wrote with a player?
Yeah, the best one, and I bet you've heard this story, the Mike Dejan story.
Okay, I think so, yes. This is back in that 02, 03 phase.
So, 02. Was that 02 or 01?
02 is the year he argues with Jerry Royster on the mound. But I think he was here and traded in 03. In fact, I know he was because I was here working in the media relations office when they put out the press release.
I'm going to have to go back and check my years to figure out the year. But whatever it was the year that the Curtis Iskanic was the closer. So this might be 02. Curtis Iskanic was going to be the closer coming. This was 02.
Okay.
Coming into spring training. He gets hurt. Chad Fox then was going to be the closer. Blows out his elbow.
Right. So as now, he was wont to do, Chad Fox.
I mean, could have been such a great major league pitcher because he had this crazy slider.
Yeah.
Just his body wouldn't let him do it. So we're a week or so from opening day, and all of a sudden Mike Dejan is the Brewers' closer.
Right.
So I write a story about this, and the headline they put on it, and you know this, JR, you don't write your own headlines typically.
Typically, yes.
But the players think you do, yeah. And the headlines are what get you in the most trouble. Almost invariably.
Right.
The headline is, Dejan is Brewer's de facto closer.
Oh, yes.
So the next morning you show up at the park and you hear the words that no writer, no beat writer wants to hear. Player X is looking for you.
Oh, my gosh.
So Mike Dejan
is looking.
That's
got to be so intimidating. If I'm 25, 26 and a player's looking for me,
yeah, I think I'd be 23.
Oh, no. I'd be so freaked out.
And he goes, so he lights me up.
Yeah.
And says that de facto is disrespectful. He closed games in the minor leagues. He's not some scrub off the street. He's not some kid.
Right.
He's a big leaguer, and how dare you? So we talked it out, and I told him what I thought the word meant, and I think what they were going for in that headline, and own it. You know, my name's on the story, so it's my headline, and I think we sort of worked through it, and it was okay, and we shook hands, and that was kind of the last I thought about it.
Right.
So he goes out that season, and despite, you know, the thing on the mound with Jerry Royster, which was astonishing,
yeah.
And probably about the fifth most interesting thing that happened that year, he saved a bunch of games.
Right, yeah.
And I see him at a charity event the following winter, and he says, the first day of spring training, come to my locker. I have something to show you.
Oh, no.
So I dutifully go and to his locker the first day. He pulls out his date book and hands me a photograph. 4x6 photograph. For people who don't know, that's a thing where you take a picture and you print it on a piece of
paper.
No
idea what you're talking about. He could have just snapped it to you and saved you the
trouble.
This
old school thing. And shows me this picture, and it's of this amazing black pickup truck.
Okay.
And I'm thinking,
oh, no. I know exactly what you're going to say.
This pickup truck. I don't get it. And he says, look a little bit closer. And I look, and the license plate.
It's de facto.
De facto.
Now that's fantastic.
He says
and
that he got.
And his name is Dejan, so it works perfectly.
Perfect. So he got so mad about us and others sort of disrespecting him and what he would be able to do in this job that he went out and he says, you know, I hit a bunch of incentives and he used that money to buy himself a nice new black pickup.
Well, that's outstanding. And that's true from my perspective as well. It usually comes down to complaints usually come down to things like, I mean, if a kid's name is spelled wrong, that makes perfect sense. But if it's usually some wording thing. Like, I used an adjective that they didn't like or something very weird. It's very weird what people get upset about. And this is a case where it's just etymology that he's upset about. That's
well,
so funny.
You know, I think it's just natural that there's going to be disagreements. You're writing about stuff and some, you know, and Twitter is the worst for it.
Yes.
Because on Twitter, I think we all kind of put things up that are flippant. And for these guys, it's not flippant. This is their life. This is their career. This is dead serious. Yes, they're playing a game, but this is serious business for the players and their family. And sometimes it's good to have a little reminder of that.
Right.
Where something that's really funny to you maybe isn't that funny to the player.
And yeah, you're right.
It doesn't mean you stop doing it and having fun and you can't get all serious and you can't kowtow to players either.
Right.
But it's just kind of the other one that comes to my mind is Ryan Braun had a stiff neck that was causing him trouble a couple years ago and it went on and on. And I said, no cameras in the clubhouse, but I managed to snap a photo of Ryan Braun and it was Joan Cusack from 16 Candles, where she has that neck brace
on. Oh, no, you put a picture up of it.
Yeah, I did, yeah, and it was not received very well. To me, it was hilarious.
I mean, it's hilarious. It's objectively funny, but maybe not in the moment for Ryan Braun.
Exactly. And you know what? That was an example, I think, of where that's probably a little bit too far for somebody who's covering the team.
Right, and nobody in my generation knows what 16 Candles is, so that's a weird reference, but... Was it 16 Candles? I think. Okay, I wasn't sure. I can definitely picture it. I know I've seen the movie. So Twitter is an entire new conversation topic, and one that we could go a lot of places with it. You get a lot of fan interaction on Twitter. I'm curious. There are a lot of things that fans say that are pet peeves of mine. For example, last year, when everyone insisted that this was a bad base running team, I always felt that there was data to show otherwise.
Yeah.
And it would drive me crazy because it was such an understood thing that people would say. There's a lot of things about baseball that people just have understood as fact that I don't think they get. That's the thing that bothers me. Do you have one or two pet peeves that you hear from fans, or maybe not even fans, just in general, that really frustrates you?
Well, what it is that it lacks subtlety. It's short, you know, by nature it's 140 characters, and there's not a lot of room for subtlety in there.
Yeah.
And your base running one is a good one, you know. And the other thing is, on Twitter, it's really easy to say, fire somebody.
Sure.
Right? And I get a little taste of this because I have not been neutered of my Packers fandom because I grew up here in the suburbs
of
Milwaukee.
Course. You're from New Berlin, Eisenhower, of course.
So, look, I mean, I grew up going to Pepsi Fan Club. I mean, I grew up going to County Stadium. And
right.
Quickly, you kind of are neutered of that, and you cover the job. I try to cover it professionally as if I were just, you know, some guy from wherever,
right.
Ohio, coming in to cover this team. but with the Packers, I'm still a fan. And when they get bad, it's a great reminder for me of like what it's like to be a fan, because
right.
you get so mad and so hurt, like, how dare
right.
they
there
fail?
Has to be a consequence for this horrible
yes,
action.
Dom Capers must be fired
yes.
immediately
yes,
for these
yes.
transgressions against football. And look, I've pulled out my phone and launched Twitter and done stuff like
yeah.
that, and then
no,
you
we
sit
all
back
have.
And
we
you
all
think
have.
Like, wait a second, now this is not
right.
So those
I think one year I actually went back probably 2 years ago with the Brewers and just deleted tweets that were like, K-Rod blew another one. I'm so angry. There was one game. It was on a holiday. I don't remember which one. Labor Day, I think. And I was so mad at K-Rod for days. I deleted several tweets. So
yeah,
I know.
Yeah,
I know what that's
like. It's a great medium for me. It's really, I mean, I get story ideas from stuff I hear from fans.
Yeah, of course.
I love interacting with people. To me, it is 99% positive. It's another thing I've never fought. I've always embraced it, but it can be very dangerous. And it can be frustrating unless you sometimes stop back and just recognize that this is meant for blunt force takes. It is not meant for
right.
honest, intelligent discussion. It is not built for that.
So social media is a good example of how this sport and all sports are embracing younger fans. A lot of people will try to tell you, right or wrong, I think wrong, but a lot of people try to tell you that baseball has fallen behind because the pace of play is what it is. They've tried to address that. They don't encourage celebration in the game of baseball, and that, like, the NBA, for example, is really good at putting out GIFs and memes and really interacting with fans. Do you feel, even though attendance numbers are what they are, baseball's still doing fine that way, do you feel that the game is slipping in some way and not reaching the fans it needs to reach?
The only thing I'll say about this, and I don't know definitively the answer to that question, but the only thing that does strike me is they've been saying that about baseball forever.
Forever, yeah.
And it remains this massively popular business, what is it, $9 billion
yeah, that's insane.
Industry. There, you know, and that's not the only measure of it, and attendance isn't the only measure. Part of it is like our kids getting out on the sand lot and playing baseball like you and I did when we were kids.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. What I do know is that the players seem younger and better than they've ever been. So I don't think there's some crisis of young talent in this game right now. I don't think we'll know the answer to this for a long time because it is much more fractured now. Soccer is a big influence
in
the last 10, 15 years. You know, we'll see. I don't think we'll know the answer to this, but I will say that it seems to me like for a really, really, really long time, people have been predicting kind of the death
yeah.
of baseball. The other thing that's interesting is that I feel like there's a turning of the corner happening with some of the stuff you're talking about, like the celebration, the Bryce Harper
yeah,
comments.
Yeah, make baseball fun again, the T-shirt Bryce Harper was wearing, the hat he was wearing on opening day.
Yeah, like,
very
I
fun.
Think there's, you know, if a Bryce Harper can, that's a guy who can engineer change.
No doubt, yeah, he's got clout.
And there are players who don't feel that way, young players, but look, it's, I think there's more open-mindedness right now in the game than
totally agree.
And even even more on the field X's and O type stuff. For a long time, managers ran their bullpens as these roles.
Yeah.
And it kind of drove the numbers crunchers crazy and some of the more creative minds crazy. I think that's eroding a little bit too. Maybe like with Ned Yost in the World Series, where all of a sudden he looked
a
little more open-minded about things.
Yeah,
Craig Counsell strikes me as the kind of guy who's very open to some of the new ideas, to numbers, to having. You know, he's talking about. I had no idea what their opening day lineup was going to be this year. Zero.
Yeah.
And that's because he wants to be able to move pieces around all over the place. That's kind of a, you know, there's a little more open-mindedness I think right now in the game. For creativity, and I think that's a good thing.
You look at like arbitration cases, and just the fact that trying to go around and naming all the closers on the 30 teams would be very difficult today.
Yeah,
used to be that was pretty easy, but now there's a lot of names of people that you don't know because it's just whomever. They mix and match. They do what they need to do.
And look, there is still a lot of old school conventions.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
Track record is such a big deal. That's the thing that drives people crazy. I know too. We're watching from the outside. Where how can player X make the cut over stud prospect Y?
No doubt, right.
And a lot of it is track record. So there is always, I think, going to be this battle between old and new. And that's kind of the beauty of the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with you. So I tell people a lot the story of when I was covering the final game of the 2008 season when the Brewers made the playoffs for the first time in really my adult lifetime, certainly almost my entire lifetime. Ryan Braun hits the home run against Bob Howry, against the Cubs. They clinch on the final day. It was great. And the experience I had covering it, but also like appreciating it as a fan. I mean, I tell people it was the best day of my life, but I wasn't cheering. I wasn't doing what I did when Bronson Koenig hit the three-pointer in the second round of the NCAA tournament a few weeks ago. So is it harder to have baseball thrills when you're in this position? Is it harder to really appreciate the fun moments? Have you had thrills as a baseball fan since you started working on a full-time basis in the game?
Well, for sure. But it is different. It's not jump up and down and cheer in the press
box.
You're going to lose all credibility.
Yeah.
But, you know, the big moment still does. It is exciting. Those Ryan Braun homers, I mean, if that doesn't make your heart beat a little
totally,
bit.
Totally, right.
The most stodgy reporter, that will make their heart beat. And that's why you then come out with a story on the back end that reflects kind of the grandeur of that moment.
Yeah.
You try to write up to the moment.
Right.
Tony Plush tickling the little single up the middle. It's an amazing moment for baseball.
So nervous that time. I was not at the stadium for that. Thank goodness. I would have fallen apart.
But then other things too. Like I've been lucky enough to be part of some or there for some really cool moments that had nothing to do with the Brewers, and you get such the same level of thrill. I was there when Travis Ishikawa hit the homer that put the Giants in the World Series 2 years ago.
Right, right.
One of my greatest moments in baseball because it capped a great game and, you know, seventh inning stretch. Steve Perry from Journey is like singing in the aisle. Then
right.
He runs down the aisle. He climbs like he's going to. He straddled the railing on the second deck.
Oh,
like
man,
he was
I didn't know
fall
any of this.
Off. And then 2 innings later, Ishikawa.
Of all people, unlikely
all
hero.
People. Yep.
That's
had walked
cool.
to the ballpark in St. Louis with him 2 days earlier.
Yeah. And that's the cool thing about the network of MLB is that you do cover the Brewers almost exclusively, but then you do the playoffs occasionally.
Yep.
You'll do the All Star game. And if they have a story that's more of national significance, you can get quotes from your guys. The reporters in the other clubhouses can do the same. So it's a really good network of resources.
Yeah, I was the beat writer for Carlos Beltran's big postseason.
That's
the,
right, 2004
Astros.
Or 5?
04, I think. And then he signed the big contract out of that. I basically was doing sidebars for the Astros, which every day meant writing about
Carlos Beltran.
His four hits.
Right. That's cool. Are there stories you've written that you're particularly proud of? Maybe it is a postseason story or maybe even a charity event story. I don't know. Like, are there a couple that really stick out that you're most proud of in your 15 years here?
That's a good question. I don't know that I don't. They don't jump to mind. They honestly sometimes they run together. And I'll be looking in my archives for something else, and you run across a story, and you look at it, and you feel really good about it.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'll see that even when I was really young, I'll look at it, and I'll be like, you know, sometimes I see something that's really bad, but sometimes I'll see something and I'm like, dang, that was a pretty good story.
Yeah, I've done that before too.
Selfish,
but it's great.
I'm going to fail you on this because maybe it's because I'm not, you know, giving myself enough credit for some of the stuff I've written. But I don't have stories that jump to mind. The ones that do stand out to you are when you hear from a player or you hear from the family member of a player who appreciated something that you wrote.
Yeah, no doubt.
Those tend to stand out to you a little bit.
When you started, you had I imagine if you had gone back to tell that version of you that you'd be here 15 years later still covering the Brewers, that would be a surprise. Did you see it then? Is this is what I want to do for a long period of time, or is it? I mean, are you surprised to be here? I guess.
Honestly, I'm not, because as a kid, I always wanted to work in baseball, and for a while, I thought that was going to be working for a team. You know, being like a PR guy for a team, or something like that. But the writing always was my favorite part of it. There just wasn't a job like my job right now to do.
Right.
So it really was right place, right time. And I do feel pretty fortunate, because I have not, save for a couple of instances that probably everybody has in their job, I have not felt this like burning desire to go do something else. I feel really happy kind of doing what I'm doing. And I'm like a little worker bee, and I could keep doing it for a really long
time.
Cool.
Who's been a couple Brewers that you really, really enjoyed covering, that you really liked working with?
Oh, boy. That's a good one. I mean, Ben Sheets was one. Just a total character.
Yeah.
Freewheeling. Just never knew what was going to come out of his mouth. Hilarious. Didn't know who Bono was. I mean, just like, you never knew. Like,
I don't think U2's played in Louisiana.
Yeah. Matt Wise was a very good one. Matt, if there was like one player who do you want to get a beer with? Matt Wise, you could sit and just have a great time.
I did a story on him when I interned with you, and I really enjoyed talking to him.
Just a real guy. Zach Greinke was one of my favorite players. We used to run down basically to the clubhouse after he pitched.
Yeah.
Because with him too, you never knew exactly what Zach you were going to get. And you had to be so on point and ask him good questions. There was one time, he was just so honest. There was one time where John Heyman had reported that the Brewers made a $100 million offer to Greinke. We were in Cincinnati.
Yeah.
So me and another writer go and we see if Greinke will comment in any way about what's going on with this. And he chided us and told us that we need to get our claws in deeper and get these stories for ourselves. And it was just the most, it was the best thing. And you know what? He's right.
Yeah, no doubt.
No, that shouldn't be reported somewhere else. That should be reported by us. I really liked his honesty. And there's many, many more players along the way. Baseball, I think, now look, you know more about this than me, because you've been in different locker rooms. I've been a baseball guy. But I think my understanding of the way the other sports work is baseball is different in that you get so much more up close and personal with guys.
Right. Well, there's just more games. There's more games. And the pregame takes forever. So
more access, mm-hmm. more downtime, more sitting on the bench during batting practice.
No doubt. Yep. It's very different. Unique.
I even think it extends beyond that, though, to like they don't wear masks.
Yeah.
You know, you see their faces in games. And I think that lends itself, too, to just feeling like the fans feel like they're closer to these players than other sports. And I think that is one of the great benefits of baseball. And it was partly why we were worried when you hear rumors about the upcoming CBA talks that access could be limited.
That was
really worrisome.
Yeah.
And it was nice to hear Tony Clark come out and say a million times after that that's totally erroneous. It's not on the table. Because I think it benefits the game, too, that these guys are humanized a little bit.
Absolutely, yeah. So, okay, kind of wrapping it up then. The Brewers, are they contenders in 2 years and 3 years? I mean, everybody wants to know that. There's obviously no right answer. But I guess what would have to happen for this team to contend on the earliest possible part of that time frame, 2 years from now, what has to happen for this team to actually be able to contend in a race?
The thing I am most watching in terms of on the field between the lines of this season is the starting rotation.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's going to dictate how long this takes, because those are players mostly under club control for a while. I mean, we're watching Jimmy Nelson right now. He's one of those guys. Peralta, is he trade bait? Is he a keeper? Youngman. Davies now coming up with Garza out. I'm sure we'll see Zach Davies in the next couple of weeks. Jorge Lopez took a huge step forward last year. Will he take another step forward? Their scouts are on the fence about him. And then who can they find beyond that? I think that's going to dictate. Those guys are either going to carry this rebuild further quickly, or it's going to hold the rebuild back. Because those are not pieces that you can just go out and grab.
Right.
They've got some interesting positional prospects, mostly, Arcia, obviously, right on the cusp, Brett Phillips a little bit behind, and then other players further behind that look like they're going to be good. And I think there's enough of a volume of those types of players that I don't think they need to be worried necessarily about hitters, but do they have any pitchers that are going to be worth a damn in terms of being like ace types, you know, lead an emerging franchise types, Arrieta types. And we don't know the answer to that. I mean, Arrieta is a great example of a guy who took forever to
get
to the level.
Came out of complete nowhere, right?
Yeah. So, you know, people get so frustrated that it doesn't happen right now. It doesn't always happen that way in baseball. So, anyway, that's a long way of saying how long? 2 years, 3 years, 4 years? I think so much of that is going to depend on the starting pitching.
All right, Adam McAlvey, thank you very much for joining me. I'm completely biased, but this guy is one of the best sports writers in Wisconsin sports, so hopefully you've read his stuff at Brewers.com prior to now, but if not, check it out. There's a lot going on over there, a lot of multimedia stuff like we mentioned, and stick with us. The Brewers season is going to be interesting, if nothing else, so there'll be lots to read and talk about over there at the site. Thanks again, man.
All right, anytime, JR. Anything for you, buddy.
You bet. See you later.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.